Good morning, and as we continue throughout the program here this morning, our next speaker is Timothy Reinbott, Cover Crops, Matching Objectives with Management Choices in Corn, Soybean, and Soybean Production Systems. Tim?
Thank you. Thank you for letting me speak today about cover crops. I've been working on them since the 1980s, and then nobody cared, but it seems like in the last several years we've got a lot more interest. Now, what is the number one reason that we want to have cover crops? Really, it's soil erosion. Where I came from in Missouri, we were number two in the nation in soil erosion, and that's not something that you want to be very proud of. So cover crops are that method that we can help control that. For example, we had a 5-inch rain event in April 1, and you can see on your left that without our cover crops, we had quite a bit of erosion, but the plots right next to it, there's in the third year of a continuous cover crop, corn, soybean rotation, that yes, we had a little bit of water movement, but it did stop the soil, not only from the living cover crop, but also the residue there. And if there's no other reason to plant cover crops, it's because of the increased number of heavy rain events that we get. Just last week, where I live, we got 2.5-inch rain. We get more and more frequency of those, and this is where cover crops can come into to play. Now, of course, we always think, well, no-till can solve a lot of that problems, and it can. But even look at this. This is corn soybean rotation again. We've been no-tilling for several years, and on these long slopes, we are still getting soil erosion. So we have to have something on the ground living at all times to help us prevent this soil erosion. Now, we have done many demonstrations to show this concept. This is one that we had tilled and cover crop and no-till, and we gave it an inch and a half rain event very, very quickly. And we had a quick runoff, of course, with our tilled. Our no-till, it took maybe 30 minutes for it to run off, but our cover crop with our no-till, it lasted up to about 3 hours before we finally got some water runoff. As you can see here, compared to our conventional, that it started running off very, very quickly. You've all seen this probably demonstrated several times before, but this is a runoff table that we had ourselves, and this is a one-take deal. This wasn't planned. We just wanted to see what happened. As you can see that we have a cover crop. This is the very first year of cover crop. This is a cereal rye cover crop on top of a corn soybean rotation. 23 years of no-till, a pasture, a worked soil, and then a very, very thick sod. And of course the very front is the runoff, and behind is what's infiltrated. And this is after about two-inch rain, that would be a downpour of what you would see. The work soil, of course, most of it ran off compared to our sod. But what we really want to compare is look at our cover crop. Again, this is the very first year of having a cover crop. And you can see that in the back, we got mostly water infiltration, little runoff whatsoever. No-till, we did have a little bit of runoff. And this is what's really how much water penetrated. So this is that work soil. We flipped it over. And let's see, is it wet or dry in there? What do you think? It's a 2-inch rain. So you can see that it is dry. And only water we got was around the edges that soaked around it. So this is something that we have done several times. And it does show this each time that how that 1 year of cover crops can make a big difference on soil erosion and water infiltration. One of the other aspects that we found is that we do have some help, some aid with our glyphosate-resistant weeds. I don't know about you, but in Missouri, we've got about 5 weeds now that are glyphosate resistant. Some of them we never even had a problem with before, such as mare's tail. But now we do have a problem with them. We also have giant ragweed problems. And there on your left, that was where we, the same area that we had this 3-4 years of continuous cover crops, you see that where we had a cover crop, we didn't have any mare's tail, whereas right next to it we did. The big reason for this is, of course, the thick mulch. Mare's tail comes up in the fall and in the spring, and having something growing there and the previous mulch there will help with that. Also, this is this past spring. Went out to our plots and our controlled treatments. This is glyphosate-resistant giant ragweed, and it takes a lot to try to kill these. And we do have help, as you can see, when we have our cover crop. Of course, as I mentioned before, why is that? It's because of that thick mulch. That not only this mulch that you get carried over from year to year, if you let the cover crops do their thing and get some biomass to them. I took this photo. I was out in one of my plots and where we split with and without cover crops. I looked at it and went back and got the map, and sure enough, there on your right was cover crop, and that was without cover crop, and this is water hemp. Again, why water hemp takes light to germinate, having that cover on top of the soil can help prevent that. And again, we had to go back and then manually control these weeds. So it does aid in our weed control. It's not something that I think that we should use as a sole method by any means, but we can utilize this. But let's look at some of our cover crops. Let's look at the winter legumes. These are 3 of them that we use quite a bit. Hairy vetch, crimson clover, and Austrian winter pea. And are there some problems with them? Are there? Sure there are. One of them is seed cost. If you really want to have a pure stand of any one of these and have it fairly thick and uniform, you're going to have to spend $30, $40 per acre. Talking to a lot of farmers, they don't want to spend that. As a matter of fact, they're wanting to beat us down. What can I do for $5 per acre? And when you're talking about some of these winter annual legumes, you're not going to be able to do it when you plant them in the fall, in September or October. And also, the thing that bothers me is the fall growth. It doesn't bother me. It's just a fact of how they are. You don't get a lot of fall growth. They're not going to be what helps control erosion in those fall and winter months and even into the early spring. You're really going to have to depend on your cereal crops for that. But also, if you're depending on a winter annual legume to fix a lot of nitrogen for your succeeding corn crop or other cereal crop, you're going to have to be patient and wait. And you'll probably get out of that ideal time that you want to plant that corn crop. For example, this is in mid-Missouri, and it'd be very similar. Early May is when we really like to have our corn planted by. And if you look at the hairy vetch, it's maybe 6 or 8 inches tall. If you took a amount of nitrogen on this, there's probably 50 pounds of N. Now, the C-to-N ratio is fairly low, so it's going to be very available, but we've shown that they get about 90% of their growth in the next 2 to 3 weeks. By the end of May, we're up to 5,000 or 6,000 pounds per acre, where we got a significant amount. Now, we've really lost quite a bit of our corn yield. So one of the big problems is when do we pull the trigger? And I think that gets back to what our objectives are. This is some data that I pulled out of Penn State that really shows that they had harvest of early, mid, and late May. And as you can see, hairy vetch, 1,400 pounds in early May, 4,300 2 weeks later, and by the end of May, 6,600 pounds. So if your objective is for nitrogen fixation for that year, I don't believe going with a winter annual legume will actually help you that year. You may have to have a whole system where your expectations are going to be 2, 3, 4 years down the road as you build that up in the soil. What about some of our non-legumes? Let's take some of our cereal crops. We have cereal rye, triticale, and oats. They have some very positive advantages. I think in the upper Midwest, you probably see almost exclusively cereal rye. Why? Versus our legumes. Because it is so versatile that you can plant it. We always mention that we can plant these cereal crops up to Thanksgiving and get them established. And by the 1st of March, mid-March, you can't really tell a lot of difference between the ones I established in November and the ones I established in late September, early October. But let's take a little bit of a look at that. An expensive seed. You can, where it may cost $20, $30, $40 per acre for a legume, you can easily get these $15 and below. One of the things I've been talking to the Missouri farmers about, why do we really even want to go with cereal rye and some of the other crops? Because the short supply, the cost is a lot. It's about $15 for a bag. Let's use bin run wheat. If really all what we're looking for is erosion control, something growing green on the soil, I really believe going with a bin run wheat might be just as well. But we do go with cereal rye often because of the root system, the winter hardiness of it. It's a little bit earlier than winter wheat. It also has this allelopathy to it. Well, these are chemicals that are released in the soil that comes from the breakdown of the plant that can help reduce weeds, as you kind of saw that. But as some data I'm going to show you later on, it can really knock your corn yields. I'm really hesitant for recommending cereal rye before corn. If you could lose some corn yield. I've tried triticale, thinking it doesn't have that allelopathy effect as bad, but you can get some there. Oats. The nice thing about oats in our region, the Midwest, even the winter oats often will winter kill. You can plant spring oats in the fall. You'll get a tremendous amount of growth. If you're into grazing, you can graze these in the fall, and they will winter kill. I often tell farmers, when you're first starting out with cover crops, you may try using spring oats. That way you don't have to worry about killing it in the spring. Of course, you lose some of those properties of having something living there in the spring, but as a first step, that's something that we want to look at. Annual ryegrass. I work closely with our local extension weed scientist, Kevin Bradley, and he has given many talks on annual ryegrass. And my recommendation is, unless you know what you're doing, don't use it. Because the timing of killing it is incredible. You can't let it get more than about 4, 5, 6 inches, or it's very difficult to control. The nice thing about it is that by March 1, by mid-March or so, its root system is fully developed. So if you're looking for something that will have a deep root system that will help break the soil up and give it some other properties, it's great for that. It's a great scavenger, but it can become a weed problem. According to Kevin, the Weed Science Society of America has ranked this as the number one potential problem in the United States because it can become such a weed. At our research center, we were experimenting with annual ryegrass as a forage. It makes a great forage. But it took us 3 years after we quit doing those studies to get rid of all the extra grass out there because it can spread fairly quickly. I should have mentioned that cereal rye and triticale make great grazing. You can get some very good average daily gains when you graze those in the winter and the spring as well as the fall. So that's another huge advantage of them. And they have crude protein approaching 20%. So you don't even have to mix a legume with that. Of course, we're all familiar with the radishes and the properties that they have is soil loosening, nutrient sequestration, some weed control. We have seen that winter annuals, we don't have as much of a problem following them. Why? Again, that fall growth, when they come up, the ground's shaded, it's covered, and we don't get very many winter annuals that way. Now, the nice thing about it for some folks is they winter kill. In the lower Midwest where I'm from, in Missouri, by Thanksgiving, they're starting to have that look about them. And then by the first of the year, they're pretty well dead. I made a mistake last Thanksgiving. I pulled one up. I was admiring how big the roots were, and I set it in my garage. I went down to visit my folks for 3 or 4 days, came back, opened the garage door up, and I thought I had a gas leak. Because they will, when they rot, they do smell just like propane. And we have had farmers have people call saying that they have a gas leak somewhere because they can smell them as they're rotting. Of course, the big drawback to these, though, is that if you're looking for soil erosion control and they are dead from January on, they're not going to give you a lot. They also, all that those nutrients that they sequestered, which is great, but if they are dead and dying and decaying in the winter and spring months, is that really giving you what you want? I always recommend if you use the radishes, let's put a cereal crop with them to help sequester those nutrients as they decompose, because we don't want to lose what we've gained, and also to help give you some erosion control. Now, one of the other ideas is, how about summer cover crops? We hear a lot of folks give testimonies about building soil up over a short period of time, and one of the ways they're doing this is after wheat, they're coming in with summer cover crops, and here we have cowpea, we have millets, we have sorghums, as well as sunflowers. They produce a tremendous amount of biomass. For example, we had about 20,000 pounds per acre this year, about 10 tons that's produced by a system like this. And also, if you're interested in wildlife, whether it's attracting pollinators, here's an opportunity here. If you're looking at seed for birds, that's another example that you can use for this. The seed cost, if you go heavy in the millets and the sorghums, it's not that great. What we always do is use leftover sunflower seeds at the end of the year that we can do this. But the big question in the lower Midwest is, do we double crop soybeans after our winter wheat, or do we go with a summer cover crop like this, thinking ahead of trying to build our soil up? And in years like what we just had, when farmers are getting almost a full soybean crop yield after wheat, it's hard to convince them of that. It's hard to convince them of what is that economic gain by going with this summer cover crop. So in those situations, we have to look at the big picture. What is it worth building organic matter, aggregate stability, some soil health values such as that to our soil? But this is a golden opportunity that we can use when we have a multiple year rotation of corn, soybean, and wheat, that we can follow that with this. The beauty of this is that you can also put in a winter annual, either mixed with it, they'll come up in the fall, or afterwards. Let's approach a little bit on cover crop establishment and what your goals are. Interceding into the standing crop. This is something that it can be done with existing equipment. I know a lot of our folks that do a lot of commercial spraying are now equipping their machines that they can overseed into corn and into soybeans. Some farmers have been innovative, as you see on your right, putting some spreaders on their machines. And when we want to do this, timing is critical. In corn, we've talked about 50% green leaves, soybean about 75% when the leaves are turning yellow. And believe me, folks, this happens a lot quicker than you think. They start turning, and once they start, they really go quickly. But also, you got to remember something else, the timing of rainfall. Also, droughts. We have been coming out of droughts, like in 2012, where the ground was severely cracked. And I'm going to overseed our cover crops into cracks in the soil. I kind of have a problem with that. Also, if there's no rain in the forecast, do you really want to spend the dollars on that? So the timing issue of these is extremely critical based on what the forecast even is. Because they've got to get covered, and you've got to get some rainfall. Is if you don't, they're going to become cricket food, just like anything else. I was at a poster yesterday talking about arthropods and how to stimulate those to help break down seeds and organic matter. Well, they also feed on your cover crop seeds. So I had some that I overseeded, and the ones I drilled 4 weeks later after harvest came up first. So that is a big issue. Often you have to up your seeding rates. And if you're looking at legumes, that becomes a bigger problem then as far as cost. My personal opinion, I've had much better luck with our cereal crops overseeding than I have my legumes or my brassicas. Winter annual weeds. One year I was overseeding a bunch of cover crops, and I noticed I had some small winter annual weeds. I didn't think much about it. What I found out real quickly, that legumes, brassicas don't compete well with them early, but my cereal crops did. So you may want to make sure you take care of any winter annual plants out there. But as we'll finish up with, you better be careful about herbicide carryover. As a matter of fact, just touch on that. This fall when I was overseeding and drilling winter cover crops, I was kind of happy to see a few winter annuals out there, because that told me that I didn't have a lot of herbicide carryover. And I'm always worried about that also. My personal luck, I've had much better success overseeding into corn than I have soybean. Part of that could be that I'm doing it about a month earlier. I have more time to get timely rainfalls, whereas soybeans, the time from turning yellow leaves to time of harvest, it's fairly short. I'm only gaining maybe 2-3 weeks, where corn, I'm getting a much bigger jump on that compared to the end of the growing season. As you can see in between the rows, we have radish, we have legumes, we have our cereal crops. This is one of the polycultures that we planted. The other aspect is the wait after harvest. And sometimes if you have to wait too late after harvest, you can go into the winter with some fairly small plants. I've had good luck, though, with those winter overwintering and then coming on strong in the spring, but they don't give you what you often need for soil protection, especially that first year. Now remember, if you are in a system that you are letting the cover crops get some size to them, you will have some carryover, and that will also help in your protection, as you can see on the one on the right. The other one way of doing it is after soybean harvest or corn harvest, you come in and you drill right afterwards. That is a common way of doing it. Drills work okay. A lot of folks are not in the wheat in a rotation anymore. You don't see a lot of drills. And the folks that do have the drills, sometimes they aren't always the best quality out there. It seems like I have a lot much harder problem controlling seeding rates as well as depths. Just this year, I was complaining to one of my colleagues that it seemed like I was either on top of the ground or 3 inches deep because the way that it rode. We don't always have invested our dollars into drills. What I like to use instead is to use the same planter that I use for corn and particularly soybeans on 15-inch centers, that I can plant my cover crops with that. Why? Because I can get a lot better precision. I once told somebody I never had an original idea in my life. I borrowed this idea from Steve Groff out in Pennsylvania that he started using it, and I thought that was a pretty good idea. What I like about this is that I can get very precise on my seeding rates. I can get very precise on my depth control. You know, when I mentioned that our drilled came up, or our planted came up before our overseeded, it's because I was using this planter that I could get my cover crop seeds exactly where the soil moisture was. And they were able to come up. What we have to use, though, is some false plates. We use for this Kinsey, where we can use soybean, grain sorghum, or beet plates to match up with what we had. One of my colleagues and I were just talking today, in our summer cover crops, we didn't have as many sunflowers as we thought we probably should have for what we planted, and came to it that we used a grain sorghum plate to cut our rates down for our millets, but it was too small. So you got to be really careful to make sure you match that up with your seed size. But we can even get these down to ultra low ranges, as I'll show you here in just a little bit. Oh, I went the wrong way. This is what it looks like on 15-inch rows. There is some data on winter wheat that shows that they'll yield just about the same in 15-inch rows as they will in drilled rows. So we've had some pretty good luck with this method. But it also gives us some opportunities to do some different things. And we can, since we plant our corn on 30-inch centers, we thought, well, why can't we do the same thing with our cover crops? Why can't we, on 30-inch centers, have our cereal crop? And then, since this is a two-stage planter, we could, in between the other 30s, the other 15, in between those, let's plant another type of cover crop. For example, let's plant radishes. Let's try to have the best of both worlds. Because what I mentioned is that the radish will grow up fast in the fall, and then it winter kills. Whereas I still have my cereal crop, my cereal rye, my triticale, maybe even my oats, that's there, that can take up any of the sequestered nutrients, it can help protect my soil, and it can give me an opportunity that I can plant any time in the spring that I want to. Because even though it looks, this is, I think, early December in last year, you see we get quite a bit of biomass, we have some nice sized tubers. But if you look in the spring, they're gone. But the cereal crops are still there. And you can see on your right, you can see the dead radish and the hole that it leaves. And also, but in between that, we have the cereal crops. But nothing will slow us down. So if we want to go ahead and kill the the cereal crops, we can. If we want to plant right into them and then kill them later, we can do that. It gives us a management decision that we haven't had before. And this is us planting into it. And you can see how we can plant right next or even on top of that, where that radish was. That it worked pretty good. And then what I did is I waited for the corn. It was about to come up, and then I killed it. I wanted my cereal crop to be there as long as possible. And as you can see the corn coming up right there. Did we have any problems? Yes, we did. When you have this much biomass, you're going to have voles. You're going to have some varmints out there. And that was a problem. And, of course, birds can become a problem also. So you always have a system here that's not perfect. But, again, it gives us the opportunity to do some management. This past spring, in the cotton-growing areas of Missouri, they had some problems with slugs in the cover crops. So, as I always told a lot of folks, that cover crops are about where no-till was 30 years ago. We're still learning. We've learned a lot, but we have to keep moving forward on this. Okay, now, planting into a cover crop. Some of my colleagues and I go around and around and around about this. Many of them will say, kill that cover crop as soon as in the spring as you can. I want nothing to slow me down. I understand that. And with corn, I perfectly understand that. So we do need to probably consider that when we do. But what's your objectives? You know, that rain was April 1. If I'd have killed that cover crop March 1 or March 15, I may not have had that on the ground to help control erosion. I'm, as you saw in the other slides, I tend to let the cover crop stay a little bit longer, as long as I can, because I want it to do this thing of building soil health up, to help control erosion, sequester nutrients, and turn those over. Now, our folks in the organic, they got real excited about 5 years ago, with this roller crimper. and how it was. And we got one. I thought, man, this is going to be neat. And that's out there planting. Here we did. We had a huge cover crop that we let it go as long as we could, and we rolled it down and planted right into it at the same time. I thought, man, this is great. I never was so frustrated in my life afterwards, because it didn't kill it, for one thing. And you're talking about 7-inch, if you let it go this far, a 7-inch mat that you're trying to plant through. Now, I turn 55 next week. So my dad put me out there planting when I was about 10. So I've been planting a long time. I thought I knew what I was doing. And I found out I didn't know what I was doing, because I couldn't get the seeds in there. And we also worried about, okay, let's compare this for the organic folks, because we had some organic research. If you rolled it versus if you mowed it down. And we found out real quick, rolling it down didn't kill it. And it came out. Now, if you're in an organic situation, you're trying to be as sustainable as possible because you want this cover crop to help control weeds. I got this cover crop that's growing back on me. What am I going to do with it if my toolbox is limited? So my suggestion was, you need to make sure you kill it, whether it's through mowing or you're a whole lot better at trying to kill this than I am. But the timing, even the timing, we really found out the later you waited, the better you were at killing it. But still, we had some problems. And this is that thick mulch I was talking about. And that's what really got me perplexed. What to do about this? How can I get through this? And we were planting through it, and there was the seed, not getting the good seed soil contact. As you know, what's the number one thing you've got to do when you're planting? You've got to get the good seed to soil contact. You've got to get it into moisture. If you don't, you're going to be sorry. A colleague and I went round and round about this spring also, about how deep to plant. He told me I was crazy. I think I proved him wrong. Isn't that right? He's sitting right there. We're still going round and round about that. So there is a problem. But when we have a no-till planter, what do we typically think that we gotta have? We gotta have a coulter. And of course, heavy down pressure springs, but we always had to have a coulter. That is just standard. Now, I know they got away from the great big wavy ones that we had 25 years ago in the bubbles, and we've gotten down to where we have the smaller wave that works a lot better. And I learned the hard way about sidewall compaction. That you, even though you can get over it, you still have to wait. I learned all that. And I still thought you had to have a coulter. And typically, even a no-till planter comes in with the plastic press wheel, closing wheels. That was what we were trying to plant into this heavy residue with a planter just like this. And I was perplexed it didn't work. Well, a student who's here, she's here somewhere at this meeting, suggested, why don't you take the coulter off? Really? And the idea is, think about this. Would you rather me to step on your foot? I'm not going to tell you how much I weigh, but it's... Well, I lied on my driver's license last week. It said, do you still weigh 240 pounds? But sure I do. Sure, let's keep that, put that on there from 10 years ago. So you would want me to step on your foot? Or some young lady that weighs 100 pounds and high heel step on your foot. Think about this. Who would you want? Me in work boots at 240 plus, or a 110-pound young lady in high heels? You want me, wouldn't you? Why? That weight spread out. It does the same thing. Let's go back with this coulter. When we have these weight pushing down on this planter, it's going between the coulter and the double disc opener. If we take that off, all that weight now is just on that double disc opener, and it can penetrate the heavy residue. Also, we wanted to think, what kind of closing wheels do we need? One of my colleagues mentioned we need some metal back there or spike tooth. So we did a study and we compared them all. We had a planter and we put on different ones. We planted through the field. We came back to the stand counts. And what we found out, as long as you had some sort of spike back there, whether it was two spikes or one spike, it did have the highest germination rate. So by planting the thick mulch, take off the coulter, and put in a spike closing wheel, and we were able to get much, much better germination and emergence. Well, we did this as some side-by-side comparisons where we compared rolling it first using that technology versus planting right into it. And what we found out was planting right into it was best. It was better. You didn't have to modify your planter. Just plant right into it as it's standing. And you can spray it last week, or you can spray it 2 weeks ago, or you can spray it a week after you do this. It doesn't really matter. It all worked about the same. And whether you rolled it afterwards, it didn't matter. It's going to fall down on its own. So our conclusions are that really we don't need the roller. We can get by with just modifying our planter or planting straight into it like you see here. And this is planting soybeans into it. On corn, we found out that we got a little higher final stand counts when we planted right into it versus when we rolled it, even with the modifications to our planter. All right, here's another video. Now, you hear a squeaking sound. Our mechanic over-tightened some. He over-tightened a closing wheel, so you hear a little squeaking, but it's not because it's falling apart or anything. But this is this past spring. This is playing right into the cover crop. I'm playing soybeans. Some was a mixed stand, some of it was almost a pure stand. I planted this cover crop with that 50-inch rope, the same planter. So you can see I'm really hitting it pretty good sometimes in between the rows. See, I had to take the coulters off also. I didn't know that was me at first. This is where I stocked the seeds down almost 2 to 2 inches because I wanted to get into moisture. This was May 31st. It hadn't rained in about 2 weeks. As you might can imagine, that cover crop had sucked some moisture out. So I stocked them down to where the moisture was. And it took a little while, but they did come up. And they did struggle. This is corn that was planted, 3 or 4 weeks earlier. 3 weeks earlier than that, and this was dry. We were dry all through from May and well into June. And the cover and the corn in this heavy residue, it actually struggled a little bit. We did lose some moisture early. Stands were a little bit later. I don't have the stand counts for you that we took them, but they did suffer just a little bit. Soybeans, they also struggle, but you got to be patient. I just quit coming out every day and looking at them, and they eventually did come up, and we had some good stands. But look at the residue that they're coming up left over from last year. This is what I like to see because I want to. This is this year's residue, but we also had last year sitting in there also. What's our overall results? In drier years, we're getting about 7 bushels more. This past year, that same field that I showed you planting, we had a 8.5 bushel yield increase. So we are getting a benefit. This is the fifth year that was in cover crops that we're doing this. So I think we're getting some additive effects of year after year of cover crops. I looked at some soil health parameters on that field. And after 5 years, our water soluble aggregate stability is significantly higher. Our fungi and bacteria numbers are way up, so we are getting some good information on building soil health. And you're not going to always get that first year, but you will get it after about 3 or 4 years. And I did a little economics. I don't know anything about economics, that buy high and sell low. My brother's an economist. He hates when I say that. But you can get a profit. Now, this was a pretty high seed cost. I actually put a lot of legumes in there. I didn't really have to, but I did. So that's why we got up to $45 per acre. If we just went with the cereal rye, we'd be down to $15 per acre and probably got a very similar yield response. This was another dry year that we had, as you can tell by the yields. And you can see with the cereal rye, we got about that 7 bushel significant yield increase. So we do get some consistent yields when we get the biomass on there. 5 minutes. All right. This is this past year. Data just hot off the press. What I highlighted in bold and in black, do you see that we had control of 36 bushel per acre with a hairy vetch? And this is our second year into the cover crop system, 45 with a hairy vetch. When we had the biomass in the 4,000-pound range, we were able to get a yield response. Now, I'm working on the data still on this. I think part of the reason that we got as large of a yield increase we did with this was because the controls had more weeds that we had to go back and control later on. So they did get some little early competition. Again, these glyphosate-resistant weeds, we had more of a problem in the controls, so that's what helped give us this yield advantage because of this. Corn yield, very similar. This was a dry year, and when we had a lot of hairy vetch on there, we got a sizable yield increase. But what you would notice, even though we had biomass, the cereal rye, we did not get one. Even though we had that cover there, we didn't get it because, as I'll show you the next slide, the cereal rye tends to not yield when you wait this long. But because of that biomass, we actually got one. This was this past year again, sister plots to the other ones. We had very good corn yields this year. And there really wasn't a lot of difference with our cover crops. But look here, with triticale, we reduced corn yield. I wasn't expecting that because of the allelopathy, but with our cereal rye, we really knocked corn yield. Even with 1,000 pounds of biomass per acre, we still did it because I think part of it is it's carbon to its nitrogen tie-up because of the high C-to-N ratios, but also we're getting some of that allelopathy that I was talking about. So following corn in our rotations, we really have to watch what we're doing. And I think we do have to pull that trigger a little bit earlier, and much like what I showed when we used the strip with a different planter, we need to pull that trigger a little bit earlier and kill the cover crop. I also think we got to treat the cover crop like a crop, and considering all these things you see here, planting date, fertility, termination date, varieties. Oh, this is planting cover crops early. I borrowed this slide off somebody else, but a colleague and I are working on this also. Can we grow our power cover crops in mid to late summer to get that jump on everything? Kevin Bradley at the University of Missouri had done an excellent study on carryover of herbicides on cover crops. I really advise you to check that out because it's pretty extensive and some surprises out there. Again, we need to consider some many different management of our cash crop. And the problem is right here. The cover crop doesn't do its thing until later. So we need to get that planted. And one thing I went out and did, I looked at a variety test. I had two different yield environments, 195 yield environment, 105 yield environment. And I looked, can we get a earlier maturing corn so that we get our cover crops planted earlier and still be in good shape? And what I found out, this is every year this showed the same thing. That it didn't matter on the maturity date. It was choosing the right hybrid. And that was more important than actually the maturity date. Are there any questions? Yes, sir. The question was, we started out with a warm season, and we still had some problems because it was dry. It was a warm, dry.
Warm, dry. Mm-hmm. We saw a little happy for the first time this year when we were excited about that faster.
Yes. We had such a warm spring that the rye was about 2 weeks ahead of where I thought it was going to be, and that's why it got so tall. I couldn't get my act quick, fast. Together fast enough. I wanted to be much, much smaller. Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you.